This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 129, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, InStockTrades.com, and Netflix.com.
I wish I could just make you turn around and see me cry. There's so much I need to say to you, so many reasons why. You're the only one who really knew me at all, so take a look at me now.
This again? Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 129. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with...
Connor!
It's always the same order.
I know, but last week I said the names. And I just thought Ron would do it again, but I didn't.
You know what I mean? I wanted to put you guys out there and see who would the blinking contest to see who would blink first.
Oh, I wait. I wait and wait.
He enjoys pulling in the rear. That was not at all. Let's just keep moving.
We're still waiting, Josh.
I'm Josh.
All right, thank you.
I'm bringing up the rear. Now, when you're under a man, or a man is under you, do you charge right up the rear, or do you...
Anyway, so we are from iFanboy.com, where we enjoy the comic books and we read lots of them. And every week, one of them, one of us picks the best week, the best comic that came out that week, and writes a review of it on iFanboy.com that you can go read. It's called The Pick of the Week. And then we come here to talk about that comic as well as other comics and other fun little bits of minutia having to do with comic books. Before we get on with the show, I want to warn you that we're going to talk about what happened in this week's books. So if you haven't read your comics yet, I would press pause and then come back after you've read them. You'll enjoy it that much better. Or if you don't really mind the spoilers and you're kind of chill like that, then just keep listening and have a good time. This week, Josh has the pick, and I'm going to take my headphones off and walk away for 10 minutes, and then I'll come back when he's done.
Oi, mate, I'm fucking well knackered, aren't I? This week, I had a respectable little stack of books, and it was just a really, really good issue of Hellblazer, issue number 243, which has just been consistently good, and so it wasn't actually a very tough pick for me. If you'll remember, I picked, I think, issue 240 back in January, so that's twice, and that has never happened in the however long we've been doing this, I don't think.
In a short span, too.
What I think is fascinating is anyone else talking about Hellblazer these days?
Absolutely. If you look...
Okay, just making sure.
Well, no, it's funny, is when I wrote the review in January, I kind of was like, no one really cares, but here it is. And this time, you know, if you looked at the thread for the book specifically on the site in the ifanboy.com/comics section, you know, people were like, I'm excited about this book. I think more people are reading it. If you look at the Pick of the Week thread, a bunch of people have jumped on and started reading it. This is by far and away one of the best jumping on points that I could give you. I mean, it's just really – it's a perfect place to start, and you'll get what it's about right away. You'll know what the characters are about. You'll get the deal, and you'll know if you like it or not probably pretty quickly because it's, you know, it's just classic. The thing about this book is – there's really every story is the same. This is not, you know, it's true. I mean, there's a in the same way, it's just very clear cut. There's a demon or some sort of evil force. John is reluctantly forced to help. He tricks it somehow. That's every single one that's happened. And so the trick becomes to think of a new dressing for that, a new set for it, and to keep it interesting. And so that's what's happened. Basically, the setup is that there's a room in the Vatican, and this Pope a long time ago said that this room is free of sin. Nothing that happens in there will be subject to God's judgment. There's no sin in that room.
That's not a recipe for trouble at all.
No, not at all. Especially with a whole bunch of Catholic priests.
Oh no.
Listen, this is the tone of the book, though, and so if that kind of thing makes you running for your pictures of Pope John Paul, then this is probably not your book, and that's fine. So basically, like, you know, all the bad energy in the room created a succubus, and it has to be dealt with. And then there's that's the deal. And then, like, the last page of the book is him opening the page on the room. You see a demon sitting there, and John sort of coolly says, "Hello, Ellie." And that's it. We don't really know what's next. I think Ellie's somebody from the past, but I don't know about that, and I was still able to enjoy it.
So it's an arc. It's not a one-shot or anything.
Two-issue arc, by the way, which is something I wanted to bring up because that's a rarity. So many times a story, they try to make it go six issues when it has no legs doing six issues, but if it was two or three, it would be excellent. And that's the case here. A lot of past Hellblazer sort of bad arcs have just been ones that have gone on for too long.
How do you collect something like that then? How does that work? Because Vertigo, you know, it's a Vertigo book, right?
Well, maybe the next one will be three or four, or, you know, I don't know. I'm glad that they're not using that as a – they're not using the publishing market so much to dictate how long they make their stories, I guess. You know, it's funny because, like, a two- or three-issue arc is such a novelty right now. Like, I miss them. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Yeah. You could just read it and be done with it. And I actually like, you know, there's the done in ones, but those are, you know, almost unsatisfying at times. But I like a nice, you know, something that goes over two or three issues. You don't get that very much. New artist on this. I don't know if he's permanent or not because Leonardo Manco's been on the book for almost as long as I can remember. But this guy is Giuseppe Camancoli, I believe in Italian.
Could you say that again?
Giuseppe Camancoli. That's how I say it on the mini, too. That's He's a Giuseppe. He's fine. And you know what's funny is at first they put John in a double-breasted suit and his hair's all slicked back. And I was like, what the hell is this? That's not what he does. But the rest of the book is actually really good. It actually looks like the kind of artists I mean, that was like my little nitpick, and I got over it. This is actually the kind of artist that I think I could see doing a really nice Queen and Country arc.
Mm-hmm.
Really just beautiful angles. He actually puts some of the scenes, he puts like a fake wide-angle lens on them so they bell out a little bit. And it's just like there's a ton of mood and tone and in every page. The colors in this issue are great. They spend a whole scene in a pub, and all the lighting in the pub is just like this red sort of judgment light, and there's, you know, it's only the red tones and then some of the yellow from the cigarette smoke, and then back in the Vatican everything is like a sickly green. So it was a really good single solid issue, and I enjoyed it, and Andy Diggle is still just doing a great job on this book. It's just fun to read every month.
How was your accent this week? Were you able to work on that? And
oh, you know, I'm having a problem because I had one camp, they say he comes from Liverpool, and you know, like Liverpool's the Scouse accent, like the Beatles are from Liverpool, and in my head John doesn't sound like, hey, what are we gonna do over there? You know, that's not it. So I don't know. I did it a little bit, but I haven't got it down yet. It continues to elude me. I think I'd like to talk to Alan Moore and see what he thinks he sounds like.
You should talk to him, but only talk about accents. Be revolutionary. Be revolutionary. Yeah.
Well, would you like to talk about any of my other books? No. So how do you picture Swamp Thing's dialogue is going? Now, does he breathe during those ellipses, or does he... The Swamp Thing's all about ellipses. If you can just put some random ellipses in, you can write Swamp Thing.
There you go. Hellblazer always intrigues me. I don't know why I don't read it, but I have one trade of it somewhere. The random one you made me buy that one time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was the Azzarello one from the
right.
Prison.
The Hard Times one, I think.
That was the first stuff I ever read, and actually, it's not that.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was good.
And that stuff's okay, but it does. It wasn't a great example of what this is. I mean, really, you should read this issue and see if you like it, because this is the way it, you know. If you like this, then you'll like it. This is the way it should be. It's a very formulaic book. It's almost like House or something like that. Where
how would you categorize Hellblazer in the terms of Vertigo? Like Vertigo, we did a whole show on Vertigo, and it wasn't like Hellblazer wasn't in the running for like flagship Vertigo book, even though it's been around for 243 issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that has its niche, but it doesn't really make waves a lot. Like it goes from, like, what happens is it's not unlike the X-Men, like it just sort of is there and it's a constant, and at times people aren't really talking about it, but then when it starts to get good, it gets kind of exciting because you see the potential that the concept has, I guess. It's such a simple concept. He's like the reluctant magician who goes around saving people, basically, and in doing so create, you know, wrecks his own life and people hate him. That's really the whole thing. So he's kind of got like he's got like a slight self-loathing thing going on, but at the same time he is he puts a cocky air out to everybody, like he always acts like he knows exactly what he's doing, and just it's very classic.
I'm impressed that it just keeps rolling on. I mean, like it just you know, like you said, I think comparing it to like the X-Men or I mean, it's almost like, you know, Vertigo's Action Comics or Detective Comics, in that it's like the title, like the day they cancel it, I think they'll be, you know,
it'll be huge.
Yeah, exactly. And but you know, I personally just have no interest, but I respect.
You're not going to get a lot of comics that hit 243.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a long time. I mean, and
that's awesome.
I've been reading. It's funny.
20 years.
Yeah. I've been reading the he debuted in 85 in the Swamp Thing book. And then,
when did the title start?
I'm on
243 months ago.
Yeah. 243
20 years.
12. That's 20 years. Yeah, 20 years. Jesus, wow, that's a 20-year comic book.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it's actually one of the best 20-year comic books for just jumping on.
Read it or not, you totally have to respect that. I mean, totally. You're not going to get many books from the two major publishers that are going to last 20 years at all, you know, no matter what.
At all.
So that's cool. I may read it. I may not. I don't know yet.
Just check the one issue out.
I will say this, though. I wasn't surprised at your pick simply because this week was rather, on the whole, lackluster.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, well, everything else that I read, there was a but to it, you know? Well, that was pretty good.
There was
but.
Nothing... The last couple of weeks have been like a lot of really good, like that was a good comic. Whereas this week there's a lot of, that was good. But,
I don't want that to diminish this book. It's not like
No. I'm just saying it could have been anything. It wasn't like last week where I saw Ron's pick and I was like, what? You know, this week I was like, okay, Hellblazer. Like there was nothing I thought really stood out or justified being a pick over anything else.
Right.
Like Flash.
Well, I can sure as hell tell you that, that Flash shouldn't have been in the running for anybody's pick.
Why are you still buying it? We had a discussion last week.
Here's the deal. So Flash number 239 came out, and before I get into the bad, I'll tell the good, is that out of nowhere, Freddie Williams' art got a lot better, like markedly, since on this run. Like, this is probably the best art of this run. But that doesn't save the awful – it's almost like they're daring me to drop it. Like, that, like what they're doing with this book – I can't believe it. Because
that's just like you walked in on like your wife and she's sleeping with somebody and you go, you know, you're really testing me here.
It's book's like,
bad.
It's amazing because the story ended last week where Flash was acting very out of character, and then it ended with him. He was complaining about money, and he got quoted on TV saying, "Hey, you know, listen, I don't get paid for this." And so everybody was reacting badly to the Flash, and it ended with him using his powers to rob everyone in Keystone City, and ended with him with a big bag of money and wallets and all this kind of stuff. Turns out, of course, there's some sort of psychological or some sort of psionic character that's all hooked up into wires and everything, and that is controlling people's emotions and that's a typical kind of DC kind of villain.
But
it's not Psycho Pirate, but instead it's some weird mutant like looking person who's all tied up and has a ball gag.
Okay, so
there's a couple of things. I'll get back to the ball gag in a second. But there's a couple of things that just kill me about this issue. So it picks up where the last issue left off, where apparently Jay Garrick and Wally spent time returning everybody's wallets, and that happened in between issues. And so now Jay Garrick is actually on a talk show talking about Wally, trying to defend him in front of the public.
Okay.
Would Jay Garrick ever go on a talk show?
Well, if anyone was. You know who would? Max Mercury. But I don't know what happened to him.
No, I don't even think Max Mercury would. I don't think they I always see like those kind of characters as just like whatever, like ignoring the media, you know what I mean, and just doing their thing and whatever they might do. So that was weird. And then you've got the Justice League again talking about saying that Wally's being an embarrassment to them all and them trying to decide whether they should go talk to him or not. Which was just like, again,
didn't that happen with the Mark Waid arc?
And they said that. They said, Batman said, remember how well it worked last time? And so basically there's some conversation about the Justice League being a, you know, whether they're the police to the superhero world, and John Stewart saying, I don't think we are. And then Roy Harper, Red Arrow or Speedy saying, okay, well, I'm going to go talk to him. But then what gets me is that at some point, Wally sees there's an ad in the paper that is made out to the Flash that we never see, but everybody keeps reacting to it. And Wally goes to investigate it, and it's a guy going, "Oh, you saw my ad. I'm so glad you came. You know, you want to make some money?" And he opens up, and he's got this big warehouse of superhero paraphernalia, and apparently he's a big collector. And it's kind of like and there are comic book long boxes everywhere and shelves of like, you know, Green Lantern stuff and things like that. And apparently this guy's got a ton of like memorabilia, and he's got some video that has some sort of word in it that he can't slow down fast enough to translate. So he wants Wally to watch it and translate it for him. And we get about 4 or 5 pages of this guy and his collection and what he does and explaining it to Wally. And then right as Wally sits down to watch it and do it, Jay and the kids come and pull Wally out of it. And they never go back to that plot line. Like, they never resolve that. So they actually got me built up going, ooh, I wonder what that is. And they'd never return to it.
Maybe they will.
And maybe, but it seemed like such a tacked on kind of weird thing. And then it ends with the with them figuring out that whatever the source of what's happening, because what happened was that Jay Garrick was acting very angry, very out of character again, and they figure out that it's the same thing that made Wally act greedy. And so they figure out that it's coming from the TV news station. So the whole Jay Garrick, Wally, the two kids, and not Red Arrow, they leave Red Arrow behind, go off looking for it. And turns out it's some villain who I don't know who the villain is, but he's got some sort of mask, and he's got control over this like mutant-like guy who's hooked up to the wires, who has the ball gag, even though the guy with the ball gag is able to speak clearly and say, he's coming, the Flash is coming here. Which
the ball gag?
Yeah, there wasn't even any effort to make like the noise or anything about that. Like, he's talking with the ball gag, but the panel has got a big ball gag in it.
I don't even know what you're saying. Why are we spending so much time going over something that's...
Because it's just so sad, because this is one of my favorite titles, and it's, like I said, they're daring me to stop reading it, because it's just ridiculously bad.
Can I recommend you stop reading it?
I would recommend we move on. It hurts.
Can I?
Why do you pay the money to get beaten?
Can I have $3 a week to kick you in the nuts?
No.
Just because you've been kicked in the nuts every week for every month.
It's just I just don't understand why it's so bad and how this is slipping through. I mean, it's at the point now where like it's whoever's the editor should be fired. That's what it boils down to.
Not Mark.
Joan Hilty and Rachel Gluckstern. I've had it with you. You're on notice. Oh God.
See if they're gonna come all around at the end and it's all gonna make sense or not.
Or not, and I'm guessing probably not, but you know. Ugh.
They need to kill off those kids.
Yeah, exactly. The bulked up kid still freaks me out. Like literally.
I understand you're by uncanny through thick and thin, and no matter what, yeah. I totally understand that. I don't understand the same for Flash.
Well, the Flash is the closest to my uncanny on the DC side. That's the one character that I really like that I committed to. I'm anything but loyal.
No, you are.
War
loyal.
As hell. Flight of the Phantom Eagle number 2.
This
I'm
was...
moving on. I'm making an executive effort to move on.
Thank you. We've moved on, Ron. Why can't you? This, if anything, was probably my next choice for pick of the week.
Yeah.
Solely because the reason I didn't go with it because like there wasn't a whole lot of story in it. It was sort of, I guess, character based and things like that. But one of the things that I really love, man, I've not been a fan of Chaykin in the past, really.
Right.
But this is a great looking book.
He's bringing it.
The shots, basically like the shots of the sky and the World War I fighter planes dogfighting and just the scale of the size of everything and the sort of the vistas it's a beautiful book.
It's funny because I'm a huge fan of Chaykin, and every time he does something, I love it. And I think you guys have been not as, you know, whether he fit correctly on Wolverine or some of the other books, but this is just great to show the mastery skill of Chaykin. Like, it's just amazing. Yeah. So,
He's well suited for some things. I don't think he was suited for Wolverine, but I think he's suited for this kind of book.
I'm stunned by how good that part of it is. The story by Ennis is, it's fairly typical sort of Ennis stuff. There's a lot of tomfoolery and some adult hijinks, I think, would be one.
Well, I mean, he enjoys – I mean, he does his war stories. This is basically a war story. It's a little, I mean, it's not fantastical at all. And really, I mean, what else is there beyond the camaraderie of the soldiers? I mean, you're not going to get much new beyond that. I like this issue a lot for the character development. There wasn't plot – so much as you got inside the heads of the people more than you had in the first issue.
Yep.
And you got a little bit better idea of who everybody is. And I like that part of it a lot. Because you have to have some of it. Because the first issue, you really didn't have a sense of who the characters were.
Yeah, definitely. It's just a good-looking book, a solid read. I'd love for more people to read it, I think.
It's unlike anything else Marvel, I think, is putting out, even on the Max side. I mean, it's a Max book, there's so few of them recently. I mean, you know, like there are rarely any. And it's just really quality. I mean, again, I agree with you that this issue, like the first issue was great because it was like, oh, this great new thing and it had that great headshot. But this one, I think, is just kind of moving it along. And I'm just curious, you know, like it's going to be – I'm hoping that the quality that this goes through at the entire 5-issue series.
Yeah.
I really liked a couple of panels where they use a device that I haven't seen a lot of where they had the pilot thinking about blowing that guy's head off. And instead of – regular flashback, it was sort of faded in the background.
Yeah, that was interesting.
His head, and it was a really nice device, which they don't use quite often.
Yeah.
It was good. I really liked it. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely up there. So check those out. I'm sure they're still sitting on a lot of shelves somewhere.
War is hell.
It's amazing how Garth Ennis, like, if he writes The Punisher, it's the biggest selling book in the world, but he does this stuff that he's really good at and that he loves doing, and...
I don't think The Punisher is really the biggest selling book in the world.
No, it was. When he did The Punisher, it was a big deal. If they were to announce tomorrow that Garth Ennis was writing Superman, you'd have a top 10 book.
Really?
I think so.
I don't know about that, because he's been writing The Punisher for the past, since he's been doing that, and it's got, I mean, it's been, which has been really, really good. But,
well, when it came out, I mean, like, over time, people forget about it.
I mean, I think when it came out, that was one of the things, is that it was the early days of the Quesada world of Marvel, and I think it was one of the new, fresh things, and The Punisher was such a joke for so long that it was almost like what's his name? Burt Reynolds and Boogie Nights. It was like, did you see that? Burt Reynolds is good again, you know, like that sort of thing. And I think if they, you know, Ennis and Superman would be really interesting, but I don't know if it'd be a top 10 book.
Hold on, you're saying Burt Reynolds was bad at one point? Let's discuss that.
He'll go on for hours about how great Evening Shade was.
Evening Shade was awesome.
Yes, that wasn't
Al Holbrook. Great Evening Shade was awesome. Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. 28, Ron, would make you pull your hair out.
Really? I'm glad I'm not reading it.
There are some continuity issues.
Yes. It was a great comic, but it features... Like last week, we talked about Fantastic Four and the fact that Secret Invasion is not affecting that book at all, even though Reed is a big character.
Yeah.
Another big character is Tony Stark.
Yeah,
if not the biggest.
Another big character is Dum-Dum Dugan.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Both of whom are in this book without any hint of what's going on in Secret Invasion.
Oh, my God.
But Silver and Red Armor was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, besides that, it's a good book. If they were going to go with an Iron Man, I would be totally okay if this was the guy. But, like, literally in this issue, like, the UN gets taken over. Stark is – I was like, they took Stark – they kicked him out. Like, they disbanded him – or what's the word?
They fired him from the head of
S.H.I.E.L.D. They fired him as being the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, that's kind of a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
Yeah, but it doesn't really affect any of the other books.
Oh, my God.
It's like when they get to Avengers, like, they were like, did you hear Tony got fired? Yeah, no big deal. Anyway.
And then in another book I read this week, it might have been Captain Marvel, it might have been something else, where Tony's like, listen, Captain America, where he's like, I'm trying to keep them from disbanding S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's, oh, God.
Yeah, it's a point now where, especially with Marvel, is that they all have their own little worlds, and they all exist separately. That's just
I mean, you guys made fun of me last week, but if you do something, I was thinking about it all through the week, but if you do something as big as Secret Invasion, you got to consider that, and that's the, oh, jeez, you know? Anyway.
Or you read them all and enjoy it. This is a really fun book.
Yeah.
I mean, even I thought, you know, it wasn't so much the Tony stuff, but it was more of the Dum-Dum. Mm-hmm. You know, Dum-Dum's a pretty major character in this issue, and I guess he's a Skrull in this. I don't know.
He might be. Maybe it's I guess he'd kind of have to be, right? Unless this takes place after the fact, but my guess is things will be changed after the fact. I'm guessing Tony won't be head of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore after this. I don't know. I didn't even think about that when I was reading it. All I was thinking was, oh, look, it's another incarnation of Tony. The Dugan thing didn't occur to me at all, but now that you say
that. That was the one that really stuck out at me. I was like, oh, there's Dum-Dum, but he's a Skrull.
I believe this book used the word stripling, too, which is a word you don't hear villains say enough anymore. This is sort of a...
But this is a really fun series. I'm glad that guy forced us to start reading it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a good series. It's a really nice sort of updating of the Mandarin, because the Mandarin could be sort of insufferable at times. But he sort of is now like a humanist eco-terrorist, kind of. I don't know. It's
kind of like Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that just makes it cheesy. Anyway,
it's like old school Iron Man action. It's not caught up in all the crossovers and all of it. I mean, there are lots of references to the Civil War and to the Registration Act and to the Initiative. But if you take that stuff aside, it's kind of old school Iron Manning, and not just because he's wearing the old school armor, which is kind of cool too.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
So two things about three things about Countdown number 2.
Yep.
That were good. One is that there's only one issue left, and it's going to be over soon. Two, Scott Collins' artwork. I forgot how much I enjoyed it.
Yep.
And three are Kirby dots.
Well, this was the – I would agree with
– so many Kirby dots. It was awesome.
I would agree with two of the three of your points. One, I think this is really coming on strong. I'm not looking forward to it ending. But the art was great. What you had here was issue 2 of Countdown – the prophecy has been fulfilled, and Orion has killed his father, Darkseid. And it was one big slugfest between Orion and Darkseid for this issue, and then at the end he kills him. And and it was drawn in an old Williamson Kirby style. Like
you could hear Kirby, the crackle, the energy crackling during the fight.
Kirby, did, you know, he's the father of the new gods. Williamson did the Orion stories that were classic. So Colin sort of adopts a hybrid Kirby Simonson style, and it's all big, and it's lots of Kirby dots, and lots of just deep, harsh shadows, and just a bloody fight between Orion and Darkseid at the end. Orion rips Darkseid's heart out. And
did Darkseid speak like a Southern colonel in this one?
You might have.
Did you walk away from it really wanting fried chicken?
I always walk away wanting fried chicken. I mean, that's something unusual.
Bad test.
But this is big, important. Darkseid's one of my favorite villains. He's always been a good DC villain, someone who actually was scary or was capable of fighting the bigger people like Superman. So,
well, I mean, but then in this book, there's the promo for Final Crisis, and there's like a set of eyes that are obviously Darkseid.
Not necessarily.
Orion.
That's true. Yeah,
there's gonna be Orion's eyes. It's like the Kingdom Come. Remember Kingdom Come? They showed Orion as the new Darkseid. I mean, that's the prophecy was that the son would kill the father.
Yeah,
and that's what's come to pass.
How long has that prophecy always been around?
For forever. I mean, it's always been in the dark side, in the New Gods. It's always been within the New Gods. So we all thought Darkseid was going to lead into the Final Crisis. Now he's dead, so we don't know what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
So.
I thought Collins did an amazing job on this.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good. And I forget that Darkseid's wearing a skirt.
It's a toga, yeah.
Yeah. So.
It's more like one of those Indian loincloth things, isn't it?
Yeah, no, or I think of it more like a medieval kind of, you know,
it's
tunic.
It's a tunic with a belt.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Although in the cartoon, they put shorts on them because kids can't deal with people wearing skirts.
Men in skirts.
Yeah.
So, it was great. No, and I agree with you that Countdown has gotten a lot better, so I wish it got a lot better 30 issues ago. So, that's all. I mean, which I think everybody knows the problems with Countdown, and that's no surprise. So.
So now we have one more issue to find out what's going to happen, and then there's a bridge issue to Final Crisis.
For those of us who stopped reading it months and months and months ago, what's the big issue in play right now? I mean, what are we counting down towards?
Yeah, we don't know.
We're counting down to Final Crisis. Well, we don't know what that is.
Well, what's the? I mean, what's the plot lines that are left? They
found it's been Darkseid's attempt to make the fifth world and to take over Earth and make it as the fifth world.
Oh, okay.
That's what the gist of this was, and Orion defeating Darkseid pretty much ended that plot. So
basically, he killed all the New Gods to take their power to bring about the fifth world. All of them, basically every New God is dead now.
Huh?
They've all been killed, and then. So we figured that would be a Final Crisis, but then now he's dead. So who knows? That's the twist. Now the one more issue left to find out what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
Desaad
will have something to do with it.
I don't know. May or may not be dead. I don't remember. There's a lot of deaths in the Death of the Gods mini. Although they're all killed off over there.
That seems like an important mini.
It's a very important mini.
All right.
That no one knows about. But if you wanted to go get it, and you're in New York. Jim Halen's Universe is one of the best and most progressive comic book stores. Jim Halen's Universe offers the best selection in comic titles related merchandise from mainstream to manga to minis. Jim Halen's Universe has it all. They don't have just the one mini. That would be silly. Jim Halen's Universe is located opposite the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan at 325 Newdorp Lane in Staten Island. You can visit Jim Halen's Universe on the web at jhuniverse.com or visit them at myspace.com/Jim Halen's Universe. Jim Halen's Universe, where art and literature meet. And Josh and I were at the big signing on Monday.
Yeah, they've had big signings every day this past week, though.
Yeah. The big, I mean, that was a huge one Monday. Yeah. It was like
that was like everybody at Marvel. Just like the only guys who weren't there was like Kirkman and Miller. Anybody else who'd written a book for Marvel in the past 2 years was at a big table. So if
it was
an accident, it was all over for them. Anyway, I wanted to bring up Robin 173. Basically, I did this because I wanted to ask Connor one question about this.
Yeah.
I thought that the Penguin wasn't a bad guy anymore.
No, he totally is. He's a mobster.
He is.
Yeah.
So, like, his legitimate businessman front is just that?
Like Tony Soprano's legitimate business. They changed him from supervillain to a gangster. They basically put him into a more crime boss role in the last 10 years. And then he doesn't rob banks. He's a gangster.
Yeah, but like, in Detective Comics, he kind of is left alone. Like Batman.
No, he's left alone. He's left alone. Like Batman can't. You can't. It's kind of like the cops can't walk into a social club and arrest the mobster because he doesn't actually commit the crimes.
You need a warrant.
You need evidence. He can't just rope him up and drop him off in the police station. They just let him go. So right, he's done anything wrong. He's been a bad guy. He's always been a bad guy. They just changed his role to that of crime boss.
Well, either way, these issues have been fairly strong. They're not amazing. I've got to say that they're dragging this out a lot. I'm kind of like, okay, let's get everybody together because I couldn't really tell you what's happened over the past couple issues that, you know, changed where we are now, I guess. But I'm terribly interested in knowing who this new spoiler is. I really want to know.
Well, and next month, we're going to find out.
I feel like I'm going to be unsatisfied by it. because I'm not going to know who it is or get the significance of it. Or she died.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, no, Stephanie was killed by the Black Mask during the war crimes crossover. I thought this was actually one of the best ones since Dixon's been back. I think he's just getting his, I think he's getting his feet back under him. You know, he just, it's been a while. I really liked the little scene with Tim and his friend Ives.
Yeah, that was good. He's got a really good hold on the character, yeah. Tim, I think. And also, they don't dress him like a tool bag in this, which is very nice.
One thing that happened that I completely didn't occur to me until this issue was that Tim's name is actually Tim Wayne.
That doesn't make sense to me. Does that – how that
– He was adopted.
He adopted him, yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you change your name.
Usually, though.
Well, I don't know. I got another question. Just because now, the car got dented, the Robin Mobile.
Yeah.
Now, it's a red vehicle that seems to be of custom make, and it has an R on the front. It has his logo on the front.
Right.
But he drives it.
I imagine the logo switches out like, you know, the old Batman cars that would he'd hit a button and they'd, you know, go from sports car to Batmobile.
Okay.
That's awesome. Because
he's like, now I won't be able to tell Zoe why I can't have the car. And I was like, you take the Robin Mobile out? That's not
good. Yeah, I imagine the dash, you know, the grill just sort of rotates. Mm-hmm. Or something.
But I'm guessing as a car, it kind of sticks out either way. But you know, what do I know?
There's a toy crossover there, I think. Yeah.
Totally.
Anyway,
that's all.
No, I think Chris Bautista's art was good.
Yep. Good stuff.
Powers Annual number one, which
Back to the Apes.
I see has caused lots of consternation on the website.
you gotta give them credit. You know that when they want to be self-indulgent, they can be self-indulgent.
No, this was the thing that you know.
Oh no, I know what it was. I just don't know why we're revisiting it.
Because it probably has some significance.
I think it's just they wanted to do another story with him as the caveman.
It's all, but that's the thing is it's also an annual, which is sort of a good way to divert.
Yeah, no, admittedly, this is the place to be self-indulgent is in an annual. So,
if
yeah.
you don't know, because I feel like we've gotten a lot of people to try the issue to try the issues in the past, right. You know, since the sort of reformatting. And so, if you don't know, there was a very famous issue of this of Powers before they started the renumbering. It was 30 something.
Monkey fucking,
right. Where you find out that, and again, if you want to read Powers and Trade and you haven't gotten to it yet, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but you might want to skip ahead a minute or two. Walker has been around forever. He is the, he's been around, he's evolved along with man, and he's always been superpowered, and there's always this other being who he's fought with the whole time.
He's like one of the original humans.
Yeah, and he had powers then, and he still does now, or he has different powers. I forget. It's been a long time. But this is just going back to see a little more of their history, and I thought it was really neat that it was brought on by like a flashback. So I don't know if his age old enemy is going to come back or what.
Yeah, I mean that's the only thing I could think where that would happen. You know, so but the thing is, it sounds like it was just some dude who was wearing a bear suit.
So. I thought this was really nice comics. There was a couple of times where. And Oming does this, but like it was a little bit of cheesecake going on in this a lot.
It was he likes cheesecake.
No, I know, and that's fine. But like even so, like the storytelling and it was I thought really good. It was really nice, just use of pages and not necessarily words. And people talk about how Bendis uses a ton of words. You know, he
no, there was just, hardly any words.
Exactly.
In the
so he was flexing that other muscle, which I thought was really cool. And I like
it. I think it served really well to show that, I mean, if you don't know the Christian Walker's whole history, that, you know, he's tormented.
Yeah, totally.
And he's got millennia of torment. Mm-hmm. You and I, we got decades of torment. He's got millennia of torment. You know, he's got a lot of baggage.
How much fun must it be to write the caveman dialogue? What do you want? Speak peace or I will crush you.
I do got to give credit, like again in the self-indulgent category, the letter pages, instead of being a letter page, it was a multi-page collection of various things about writing from Bendis and Brian Reed and Sean McKeever and Matt Fraction and Gail Simone that was pulled from the Bendis board, but the guy who pulled it together made it into like an interview. And I mean, if you're interested in like making comics and writing comics and behind the scenes stuff, it's great to see it all kind of collected here over like 10 pages of reading. It was really, really interesting. So.
Josh, did you read that?
I read some of it, not all of it. I had the pick of the week. I had to shoot a thing. There's a lot to do.
But it's the kind of thing where, I mean, I've been reading it in little bits and pieces, and you know what I mean? Like, it's not the kind of thing where you got to sit down and dedicate, you know what I mean? You can read a page at a time, but it's those really interesting. And other names get in there, you know, like Jeff Parker, Dave Mack, you know, basically, you know, so Steve Lieber. So it's pretty interesting. So,
definitely.
Awesome. So I wanted to talk about The Sword number 7 because The Sword is the Lunar Brothers' latest series from Image, and I think I've figured out the problem with the Lunar Brothers.
First of all, we didn't pace this show good because now Josh and I check out for the next 3 books.
Yeah, well, I'll be quick. I'm not talking so much about the art because I think that the art of the Lunar Brothers I really, really like. I really, I'm a big fan of it. And I think it's the kind of thing where you're either a fan of it or you're not. And so I'll leave that be where it is. But I think they have a problem with pacing because here we are 7 issues in, and this is the first issue where I really feel as if the story is moving.
Didn't Girls have that
Girls suffered from the same problem. Girls was a 24 issue series that was beautiful that really could have been 12. there was a lot of repetition in Girls and things like that. And so here we are with The Sword where it's taken six or seven issues to get to establish the characters and establish the setting and establish what is happening, and now we're just getting moving. And once it gets moving, it's just like I've finished reading this and I can't wait for the next issue. So
what was that first mini they did, the first series?
Ultra.
I like that. Ultra
that was great, and that was like 5 or 6 issues.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Yeah. That was fun. I have no desire to read the other ones.
Yeah, and then the thing is, I've recently spoken to people who've read Girls in trade and in the collected edition, and you know, there's the argument going, well, you know, they're constrained by the issue format, and it reads better in trade or whatever, and it doesn't. The same argument that it's just dragging on happens in that format as well. So I think they need to learn to speed things up a little. So,
is there a cap of how many issues there's going to be for this one?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So, and then typically they don't. I mean, I don't know. Like with Girls, they early on they said it would be like a 16 issue thing, or whatever, and then they said, we're just going to take the time we need to do it. So I think they're just rolling as they're going. So really, I don't think it's an ongoing though. But who knows? But this was really good. And it was a lot of fun. So
good.
Real quickly, I just want to mention a couple of months ago, the Perhaponauts annual came out on Image. That was the first Perhaponauts release. Well, this week marked the first issue of the regular ongoing series. And when I talked about the annual, I was saying how it's very similar to Proof and a little bit of Proof, a little bit of BPRD, Hellboy kind of world, whatever. But I got to admit, this first issue was really good. Not that I didn't think it wouldn't be, but it didn't have a vibe of Proof or a vibe of BPRD at all. So like while on the surface it has those, you know, the similarities and that there's a Bigfoot and Chupacabra and like in a ghost and, you know, kind of paranormal things and happening, this I believe this picked off where the old series that was published through Dark Horse left off. So there's a little bit of, you know, kind of, you know, but they do a good job of catching you up in the first couple of pages, and it was just a lot of fun to read. It was just kind of that weird kind of occult kind of, science fiction, but, you know, kind of weird mystery, kind of cryptid kind of stuff, but done with a different kind of tone, a lighter tone.
Who
so
does
I dug
this?
It. It was written by Todd DeZego and art by Craig Rousseau.
Okay.
And just really pretty, too. So
yeah. I picked it up and I flipped through it and I just went, I spent a couple of minutes sort of looking at it. You know, I don't think I'm interested in this. Nothing against it. I just decided not to go for it.
Yeah, I feel like maybe when these issues get collected and traded, if you give it a shot, I think you might be surprised because it's a little different.
Well,
so,
as soon as you read Hellblazer, I will. There it is.
Whatever. And then finally, Captain Marvel. The Captain Marvel miniseries has come to an end. Issue 5 of 5 came out this week, written by Brian Weed, drawn by Lee Weeks. And now, I don't know if they originally planned for this series to go in the direction it went in, or if it was changed to accommodate a Secret Invasion. I want to say that they planned for it originally because this issue ties in the painting that Captain Marvel was staring at in the first issue. And
I'm sure it was. It's not long enough where they could – not a lead time is needed to change.
Well, the first issue came out a few months ago. It could have. I mean, you never could have.
But Bendis, who's orchestrating the thing.
Sure, possibly. So the ultimate, basically what it boils down to is the Captain Marvel that's been running around the Marvel Universe since Civil War is indeed a Skrull. And he's a Skrull that was genetically reprogrammed with Captain Marvel's DNA to appear like Captain Marvel, and he was going to be a sleeper agent. And that when he sees that painting, he's supposed to then trigger and activate. But something went wrong in the two scrolls that were applying the programming, and he broke loose. And so now he actually thinks he is Captain Marvel. And so there's this Captain Marvel who's actually a Skrull who thinks he's Captain Marvel out there protecting the Earth.
So he doesn't realize he's a Skrull.
He realizes he's a Skrull. He just doesn't accept it. It's this whole kind of metaphysical, okay, but aren't I the man that I make myself?
Ty.
He's Boomer. Boomer.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Ty.
So, so there's a lot of that going on.
Well, I don't think Ty's decided yet.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think there's a little bit of denial there and self-loathing. But anyway.
The old man wouldn't do it that way.
I think, wouldn't you have thought that once all the Skrull paranoia hit, that the first person on the hit list would have been Captain Marvel? Like all the people, instead of worrying about what,
from out of nowhere.
But Tony Stark was a Skrull, and that would have been, what about the guy that came back after dying from cancer?
Let's put him in charge of the prison.
What's really interesting is that this issue ends with the idea that okay, he's doing his duty as Captain Marvel, protecting the Earth, and he spots three Skrull agents in the church of Captain Marvel and basically pulls them up into space and throws them back towards Earth to make them burn up in the atmosphere. And he's saying, Captain Marvel will protect it at all costs. But so in Secret Invasion number one, didn't he take out the Thunderbolts?
Yes, people are saying that they think now he was acting as protecting the Earth. There's Skrulls and the Thunderbolts. That's what people are saying.
We can see that. So who knows? I mean,
but it wasn't written that way. It was written as he was attacking them. But he didn't say that he will love you line. So who knows?
Yeah, true.
I would really like to read the second Secret Invasion.
Yeah, or a next part of any kind. Yeah. Like a tie-in, something.
Well, I mean, Secret Invasion number two is supposed to be on schedule, so wait a couple more weeks and it'll be out. So
you seems to be not use on time. I'm not worried about that. I'm just like I want to know.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's your update for Captain Marvel, and it ended up being a pretty good series. So
cool. If you're writing user reviews on the website ifanboy.com, I need to repeat that. We like to highlight them. We do a post on the website every Monday, and then here on the show we'd like to pick a couple. Fanboy Strikes Back David talked about X-Men Divided We Stand number 1. He gave The Story of Five and The Art of Four. Is a book that out of five.
Out of five.
A book I haven't heard anything about, so I thought this would be a good one. It said, this book should have come out a couple of months ago. It would have really helped smooth the transition from Messiah Complex, but regardless, it was a book filled with wonderfully crafted character examinations and truly touching emotional moments. Ron, your take on that?
I agree with him. It should have come out a couple months ago. This is kind of like an anthology book, a bunch of short stories by various creators like Scotty Young and Jamie McKelvey and Matt Fraction did a Nightcrawler story, and
Mike Carey wrote one.
Yeah, so I mean, it was just focusing on some of the B and C level characters that were affected by the X-Men breakup, and it was good. I mean, but it was like I said, it's not necessary reading. It's just more kind of filling in the gaps or kind of that sort of thing. And there wasn't a bad story in the bunch. So
I completely disagree. I gave it a 1 star on FMBoy. It was boring. I bought it for the Jamie McKelvey art, which was overcolored to death.
Yeah, that's the one thing that made me cringe, and I felt really, really bad because
it ruined his art.
It totally did. And what happened was, it basically he must have handed in his pencils, and they gave it to, because I looked at the credit, they gave it to whatever overcoloring Civil War esque coloring job company. What is the name of it? It was somewhat. What is it? It's Guru EFX Color Art.
Yeah.
And it just totally, everybody had a 5 o'clock shadow, and it hurt his art a lot. And
Jamie's art works well when it's simple, because it's simple, and simple doesn't mean bad. It's simple. When in black and white and Fungram, it was great. Suburban Glamour had color, but it was stylized and simple color. Like everybody was sort of colored because they were colored like they were comic characters. They weren't colored like they were trying to be painted on. This was like every little muscle was shaded, every little crease in their face was colored in. And this wasn't the art. This was the colorist doing that. Yeah. And I looked at it, and I literally cringed at the art. And now it was like someone punched me in the stomach, because he's one of my favorite guys working right now, and they just destroyed his art.
Yeah, they did. It's really kind of sad. And I tried to look through the colors to try to look at the pencils, and the pencils were probably good, but you couldn't because it was amazing to see how much effect this colorist had on this book. So...
Yeah,
it's sad. But the thing is, I'm not surprised you found it boring, because unless you care about these characters, then it is of no value to you whatsoever. So,
yeah.
But the Jamie story was really sad to see. So, ugh. All right. our next user review comes from Dan Ken Reed, and he submitted a review for Countdown number 2, of which he gave the story a 1 and the art a 3 out of 5. And he says, well, it's almost over, and I think it's safe to say the series has overall exemplified all the problems that many detractors have with big events in general, and with DC in specific, namely that overblown crossovers are prone to creating a disjointed experience and that DC's continuity is just too damn dense. Strong words from Dan Ken Reed.
I would agree that this would be the poster child for problems with big crossovers. And whatever happened behind the scenes happened, and it clearly affected the storyline because it changed many times, and it never did what they said it was supposed to do. I think it was an editorial problem because I think some of the stories were good.
Yeah.
I think last month in general has been really good, but I would disagree that the continuity is too damn dense. I think DC and Marvel both have continuity problems, and they're just different.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that like I said last week, I'm kind of sick of noir. I'm also kind of sick of people bitching about events and event fatigue and all that kind of stuff, because of all the people in the world, I mean, like, we read a lot of comics, and personally, I don't feel as if I have event fatigue. I read the stories as they come. Events have been happening since the 60s. You know what I mean? Like, nothing's really changed about that. It's a matter of how much you allow yourself to get sucked in by the events. And if you feel like you're being abused by, I got to buy all this, then don't buy them. I don't buy them. I don't read them if I don't want to. You know, so. What?
Unless it's the Flash.
Yeah, well, no, but it's not like there's a Flash event.
I'm kidding. Yeah, but the thing is, like, DC's continuity is dense, but Marvel's continuity is also dense, and also, in a sense, people who like continuity would probably be applauding DC for trying to make it work, whereas Marvel just seems to be ignoring their continuity with most of the big books.
Two different philosophies. And there's always going to be something.
I think it's also just like it's in vogue to bitch about crossovers. It's always been in vogue to bitch about DC's continuity, which is just stupid.
Yeah,
it's no more or less dense than any other 30 plus year
or universe. 20.
There are a lot of Earths. There's a few Supermans running around. I mean, that can get confusing.
And one's from Kingdom Come, and one's normal. That's not confusing.
No, then there was an Earth 2 Superman. Is he gone now? Then there's a Superboy.
Yeah,
he's, and Superboy,
he's gone. Superboy's gone. Superboy's gone. There's only Superman Prime. He's a villain.
See, I don't know. I just,
all right.
You're being glib for the sake of humor. But that's what everybody's doing. They're being glib for the sake of humor. There's no basis in that criticism.
Which obscures the facts. Yeah.
It's not a criticism. I've been confused by it. I don't know when all these.
But what you're talking about is not real. There aren't multiple Supermen running around. There's
but
two.
I don't know that.
Because you don't read the book, so you criticize stuff you don't read, which is what I'm talking about. It's glib for the sake of humor.
All right. Well, moving on, if you wanted to read more about multiple Supermans and other comics, you can go to ifanboy.com/comics, or you can read all the other reviews and see what other people think of their comics. And if you wanted to read up on your history to deal with the next big event, you can go to instocktrades.com, where you can pick up trade paperbacks up to 37% off on their website. They've got free shipping on orders over $50, which comes in helpful with the heavy absolutes and the big omnibuses. And they've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. They got new releases that come out every Wednesday along with the regular comic books, and orders usually ship within 48 hours. So make sure you head over to www.instocktrades.com, and as a iFanboy special, they've got our book of the month, Justice League International Volume 1, discounted 47% off. That's like $13 and change, which is ridiculous. So if you haven't picked up the Justice League International Volume 1 yet, head to instocktrades.com and pick up your copy today.
I feel like Matt Lauer.
All right, on to the email. Our first email comes from Alan, who has a question. If we could only read 5 books monthly, what would they be? And he says, yeah, I went lowbrow. Want to fight about it? Well, apparently Connor does. Connor, 5 books, go.
Detective Comics, Batman, Robin, Nightwing, and that's a tough one. Birds of Prey.
Interesting. Josh, go.
Wait, are you picking like all time or as they come?
No, you can only buy 5 books monthly. Of the books you buy right now, you can only buy 5 titles.
Okay. Captain America, Powers. I'm trying to think of what I buy. Fables. New Avengers. Hellblazer? Just because I've been buying it forever? I don't know. I feel like I'm missing something.
Uncanny X-Men, obviously. New Avengers, Ultimate Spider-Man, Justice Society of America, and Echo.
Ooh.
You can borrow my copy, Josh.
Okay. That's cool. Right. We can share. So we can actually get 15 books a month out of this if we...
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you pick 5 or 4, Josh?
I picked 5. I said Hellblazer at the end, I think.
Yeah, Hellblazer was the last one. Yeah.
I've been reading that for the longest, I think. It's my longest ongoing series.
It's your Uncanny, and it's your detective.
Yeah, but not really.
That's your R. You've been looking for your label. You're the Hellblazer guy.
But I'm not.
Yeah. You're the Vertigo guy.
Vertigo guy. Go read Sandman. Next email.
Emily from Pittsburgh, Kansas writes and says, I realized today that March is Women's History Month, and it got me thinking. I got into comics about 6 years ago, and I haven't really read anything that was written or drawn by a woman. I know that the comic industry is one of the industries that women are not in the forerunners, but Karen Berger being the only woman I ever really hear about. I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations for good comics written or drawn by women.
There are so many women in comics. Admittedly, there are a lot more dudes, but there are a lot of women.
Well, percentage-wise, it's low.
Right, yeah, but there are good women. I mean, like Gail Simone, she was writing The Atom, and now what is she writing?
Wonder Woman.
Writing Wonder Woman. She's a woman.
Amanda Connors, a artist.
I love Amanda Connors.
And when she does work, like, it's a big deal. Like, Jill Thompson has done lots of work.
Emily, if you want to read one of Amanda Connors' best work, go pick up. There's an Image book called The Pro. It's a little adult. Garth Ennis wrote it. Amanda Connor drew it. It's amazing. The art in that is great. So.
Amy Wolfram is currently the writer on Teen Titans Year One. That's really, really good.
Yep.
Nicola Scott.
Yep. Oh, go ahead. Louise Simonson drove the DCU and Marvel U for years.
Yeah, she doesn't work as much now, but you find her stuff in back issues and trades. Wheezy.
Nicola Scott is currently the artist of Birds of Prey, and she's really good. She's started off a little shaky, but she's gotten really, really good every month. Now she's a really, really good artist. Robin Firth is writing the Dark Tower books. She's a woman, clearly.
There are a surprisingly large number of colorists in comics, including Christina Strain, Laura Martin, Laura Allred, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're not writing or drawing, but they're coloring the books, so that's pretty cool.
Pia Guerra, who did Why the Last Man.
Ooh, good one, good one.
They're out there. I mean, percentage-wise, there's probably not a ton of them, but, you know, Trina Robbins or that name is escaping me. Colleen Duran, those are sort of legendary names.
Trish Mulville's another colorist. But there's also a shit ton of female creators in the indie scene.
Uh-huh.
Becky Cloonan, she's on. Mm-hmm. She does stuff for Vertigo, artist for Vertigo. But in the indie scene, there's so many.
China.
A lot of China, but she hasn't been working that much. She's been doing a lot of stuff with Scholastic, actually, because I was wondering, like, what is she working?
That's probably where the money is.
Yeah, no, I don't blame her. But if you go to a comic convention and walk through Artist Alley, there's a lot of female indie creators that are making some good stuff. So
Cecil Castellucci.
Oh yeah, she's writing the Minx, the Plain Janes line. I can't wait for that sequel.
There's a bunch for you to look into.
Yeah, awesome. So if you have any questions, or if you want to know about any anybody else in the comic industry, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
And if you're sick of comics and you just want to watch some movies, you can go to the Netflix. They have 90,000 titles. That's a lot of them. No late fees. Free shipping both ways. They got the Blu-ray titles if you want to go with the HD. Fast delivery, usually like a day, and it's already here. The majority of the shipments The plans start at $4.99, and you can get a free 2-week trial if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy.
Our first voicemail just got a question about comics, surprisingly enough.
Wow.
Hi, FMboy. It's Luke from Denver. I have a question about Dunham One stories. I've been reading Detective Comics, and I've picked up a couple images or issues of The Spirit. But I'm, just kind of wondering, is there anything more like that that is like kind of like a continuing story that doesn't kind of like have a whole lot of 6-issue runs that like each one is a done in one? Because that would be really great to find. So let me know.
Luke, that is a good question, and you've sort of stumped the iFanboy staff. Other than Fell, which doesn't really come out very regularly, I don't know if there are any other books like that.
I'm sure everyone's going to write in and tell us the ones that were.
Isn't X-Men First Class one-shot?
Yeah, actually, X-Men First Class and Wolverine First Class are one-shots. Yeah, that's a very good point, Connor. Yeah,
it's still a rarity, and
it's totally rare.
It was bringing up the idea that it used to be the comics, you'd have like a 4-issue arc and then a 1-story issue and then. you know, two issue, you know, like we were talking, you know, the Hellblazer issue at the top of the show, you know, that's just a two-part story, which are so rare. Now everything is like, it's a six-part story and an eight-part story, and or if you're Ed Brubaker, it's a 38-part story. You know, I kind of miss that varying degree, like just to break up the spacing of it, I guess, a little
bit. Well, yeah, well, between Detective Comics, The Spirit, Fell, and the X-Men and Wolverine's First Class, that's a pretty good starting point. And like we said, I'm sure people are going to tell us ones that we don't know about. So, but yeah, no, it is rare. Everybody's writing for the trade. So,
but there's no reason why you can't trade together a two-issue story and a three-issue story.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I've been reading a lot of Bronze Age books and or whatever, Modern Age, whatever, like 70s, 80s books, and there were a lot of one-and-dones or two-parters that were just, you know, like you just don't see that anymore.
Well,
so.
Just reading through the Grant Morrison JLAs, you know, like the book will have two or three whole stories in them consisting of, you know, two to three issues apiece, which is cool.
Our next question's got a question about a Dark Horse book.
Hey, guys, it's Kevin Chicago. You know what? I just realized I've never really heard you guys talk about the Umbrella Academy. And I've thought about getting on this book, and it seems to be making a lot of buzz on everywhere except your show. I've never really heard you talk about it. But just wondering if any of you guys read it, if any of you guys, you know, recommend it.
Au contraire, my good friend. In fact, we have talked about the Umbrella Academy. We just didn't talk about the last issue, but we talked about a couple of issues here and there as the run went. You can go back in our feed and find that. It's in the show notes. But then also, we did a whole interview with Gerard Way, the writer of the Umbrella Academy, last fall. So if you go to ifanboy.com/podcast and look through the audio podcast archive, or if you look through our feed, you should be able to find that interview. I think it was in November or so. So I think we have talked about the Umbrella Academy.
Are Umbrella Academy fans the new Fables fans?
I think that, and Deadpool fans. I think they might be the sensitives. So, all right. So, if you're sensitive and you want to complain to us, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And before you call and scream, I'm kidding. We love you.
We wanted to mention also Travis Valentine from Lansing, Michigan, sent us in a iFanboy song, which was an original song about the show, which we're going to play at the end.
It's a song about this show.
Yes.
This specific that's one? Just ridiculous. How would you know?
I don't know. It's about episode 129.
No, that's really cool, though. That's awesome, and thank you,
so
Travis.
We're going to play that at the end of the show, and thank you, Travis. That was shocking, to say the least.
Yeah, so stay tuned to the end of the show to hear the iFanboy song.
Speaking of iFanboy, you need to get over to ifanboy.com, read the full Pick of the Week review, and all the discussions on every issue that comes out, and all that stuff, and everybody else's reviews, and there's stuff every day, and you need to go there.
Yep. And you're going to be listening to this after the New York Comic Con. We hopefully will survive New York Comic Con, and go to ifanboy.com, and you can read all about what we saw there and all that fun stuff and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure.
Really?
Well, we'll mention that it's there.
I didn't know we were going to be writing stuff.
Well, no, we're not writing stuff, but, you know, we're Twittering and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can also go to ifanboy.com/store where you can check out a lovely entryway into Amazon and the wonderful world of comic books. And, you know, just go to ifanboy.com/store. You can see our latest our recommendations as well. You can search for other comics and purchase stuff from there, and it helps us out in the end. So thank you.
In addition to this show, I don't know if you know, we have a video show every Saturday from revision3.com. And this past Saturday, we understood comics. I think we understood them quite well. Next week, should everything go correctly, New York Comic Con's video show will be there.
Hell or high water. And then
it could be 20 minutes of unedited, just raw footage. We don't know yet.
Avant-garde comics journalism. And then every weekday, you'll find a little three-minute tidbit, a little bite, the iFanboy Mini, which will be about damn near anything we want.
And if you like iFanboy and want to show your loyalty, you can go to jinx.com/iFanboy and pick yourself up a t-shirt. Join the InterNation.
You can email us at contact@iFanboy.com, or you can send us a voicemail, 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Anything you want to tell us, we will listen.
Yes. You want to socially network with us on the web, go to ifanboy.com/about. You'll find links to all of the MySpaces and Twitters and ComicSpace and all Facebook group, everything there.
Yes. And if you dig us, you should head over to iTunes and write a review, or let everyone know what you think of the show. Or just tell your friends, or tell your comic book store, or tell anybody who likes comics to listen to the show. It really helps us out. Spread the word.
And if you want to donate some cash to the show, help us out, you can go to that at ifanboy.com/donation.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fun week.
No, you got to speak in future past.
It was a fun week.
It will have been.
Oh, no, and I'm saying it's probably going to be a fun week as well, of putting together the New York Con show and relaxing after the con and all that kind of deal.
What's this word you just used?
The we word.
What does that mean?
All right, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh.
The iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. Connor and Josh making memories that last. Every week I tune in to see what's going on. I like it so darn much, I even wrote this song. I fanboy.